This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Rise above and be in control with today's business headlines, driven by Volvo Cars.
7:49 right now, you're listening to The Morning Round. Melissa, Joyce and Chuang here with you. And in about 15 minutes or so, The Breakfast Grill. Today on the show, Joyce, you're going to be speaking to Ng Kiat Ming, the Group Managing Director of Surya Capital. They've been incorporated since 1983 and predominantly are in ports.
Yeah, they've grown into a diversified entity. And I'm going to talk to them about their earnings trend, looking at, you know, their margins that it's been compressed recently. Also, be talking about the stock because, you know, they are owned by the Sabah government. I mean, it's a substantial shareholder of the company, and that should mean stability, right, in terms of flow of projects and all that. But the stock does not reflect that. And talking to people on the ground, you're saying that it's because investors do not see a catalyst for the stock moving forward. So,
This is going to be interesting. So I'm going to be tuning in for that. Make sure you stay tuned too in about 15 minutes. Ng Kiat Ming, the Group MD of Surya Capital, on The Breakfast Grill. But now, of course, everyone is, I guess, looking ahead to Budget 2019 this Friday, as Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng will unveil Pakatan Harapan's maiden budget. Now, no secret that the government is operating within restrictive finances, and we know that we're likely to see new taxes being introduced. There's been a lot of talk over the past few weeks. Speculation is rife that a form of consumption tax, which is similar to a service tax, would most likely be implemented for foreign digital service providers who do not have a permanent establishment in Malaysia.
Yeah, so digital tax is definitely something that everyone's expecting to be in the budget this you know, coming Friday. And in this story in the Edge Financial Daily, they interviewed EY tax consultants, and they said that, you know, having this consumption tax when it comes to digital tax, that would be an easier a way to implement it compared with a direct tax on the income of the companies that are not based in Malaysia.
Yeah, we talked about how difficult it would be to try and tax these guys, right, mm-hmm. given that they are not domiciled here, but perhaps taxing the service itself. Right?
Yeah, and again, you know, when it comes to taxes, it's always tax from source. That's the traditional way to tax. Mm-hmm. But because of the digital economy, a lot of governments are, you know, they have to figure out a way to tax all these providers, given that, you know, consumption, retail trends have changed.
Yeah, but it's a balance act, because the digital economy is a huge growth catalyst for the economy, any economy around the world. So there's a balancing line between what the government can tax and what the government stifles in terms of economic growth, right? So the other thing that the EY's person said, Ewing Ping, said that it's a favourable tax framework is actually an incentive to attract and retain investors. And it's also a good time to invigorate the private sector, because if you tax the private sector, then your growth catalyst might be diminished, right?
So it's not a long-term plan.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not something, I mean, Malaysia would not be the first country to introduce a digital tax, you know, if the government decides to do so. I mean, if looking at other countries, there's Netflix tax in Australia. You also have the equalization levy in India, and in the UK, they have introduced a digital service tax. Yeah, so other countries are looking at all these things.
Yeah, actually, I'm interested because Netflix is not based in Malaysia, right? But they charge, what, $45 for every month? And that's a lot of money. I don't know what kind of subscriber numbers they've got. But it's a fair whack.
Mm. Well, okay, look, so as you mentioned, Joyce, we're not going to be the first country to do this. I believe Singapore will be the first within this specific region to implement the tax. They will be imposing GST, I think, come January 2020. The question really is, I mean, this is a pool that most governments or most countries cannot afford to ignore, right? Mm. It's ready for tapping. But how well it will go down with consumers and how they're going to do it logistically, how they're going to do it. So that's, I think, why we're speaking to the tax people to find out whether this is feasible.
Yeah. So digital tax is definitely one of the taxes that could be in a budget this coming announcement on Friday. Also looking at carbon tax. I think some people are expecting potential carbon tax. There's also talk about inheritance tax, but whether or not that's going to be making a comeback, because remember that was repealed in 1991 and it's not so easy to execute and implement as well.
Yeah, at this point in time, I also want to reference my interview on Edge Radio with Professor K.S. Jomo. He pointed out, I think quite rightly, that Malaysia's growth and development over the last few decades has really been driven by the local private sector, local Malaysian corporations, as opposed to all the incentives given in the past to attract foreign investment.
Sure.
Right? I think it's quite right in pointing out that it's the growth of the local economy that has come from local businesses, right? So going back to capital gains tax, and if Malaysia tries to introduce capital gains tax, there's also the details behind it, because it's not as easy as just saying let's tax the rich based on the gains they make from selling their assets. For example, in the US, they make a distinction between capital gains for short-term gains and long-term gains. There's also the fact that around the world, in, for example, in Australia, losses incurred during the during the sale of a capital asset can be offset in future for current or current future.
In English,
current
please?
Or future capital gains, right?
In English.
Okay. So in America says they make a distinction between long-term gains and short-term gains, right? To weed out the speculators from the long-term investors. So they try and protect you that way. Mm-hmm. In Australia, they said if you make a loss on a capital gain, just like how they can get tax you on a gain, you can use a loss from selling your asset to offset future capital gains. So there's a bit of a playing field going on
right.
there, you see.
So there's mm-hmm. there's some nuance to it.
There's
so
some
the question
there.
Is what if it is a type of tax that the government is considering, what kind of nuance will fit the local
yeah.
context?
And what kind of regime do we kind of like
correct. Because
replicate?
We are a different animal in
yeah.
itself,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And also you want to compare yourselves to your neighbors as well. What's the tax structure there? Because you don't want
correct.
To be less competitive compared to your neighboring countries. Currently, I think in Malaysia, we only have a capital gains tax on property. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a tax on capital gains can also affect a wide range of assets from investments in the stock market
yep.
to valuable collectibles. So the question is, what if CGT, if capital gains tax does come on stream,
what kind?
Could, yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, I think there are also potential ones that could come on stream, new taxes, soda tax is also another potential new tax that could be coming on board.
Yeah, we're also, I mean, it's not just the new taxes, but also we're focused on the size of the fiscal deficit ahead of budget 2019, really a spotlight on where we think the deficit forecast is going to be. We have now Maybank Investment Bank's group chief economist Suhaimi Ilyas saying that he's expecting it to be about 3.5 to 4% of GDP for both this year and the next year, mainly due to that $21 billion loss in revenue from GST. Now, I guess also this has been we've also looked at the 11th Malaysia Plan, the midterm review for that, and there's some, I guess, forecast or forward guidance in terms of where the budget deficit is expected to be. But all in all, it's about that, right? So increasing tax revenue, but also cutting the expenditure.
Yeah, don't forget 2020 was supposed to be the deadline for fiscal parity, for mm-hmm. budget parity. But it seems as if we're going to be missing that by some ways. And while there are some arguments to be made for having a budget deficit, because you know, unlike a human being or an individual, you can basically print your way out of trouble. And there should be an argument for having running a deficit. But be that as it may, there are repercussions on Malaysia's sovereign credit rating. And in the wake of that news, there's a story from Bloomberg citing a source citing a source that Malaysia's mulling of a global bond sale, whether it's going to be Islamic denominated or dollar denominated, we don't know.
Oh.
Yeah. So obviously Malaysia needs money.
This is interesting. If it is, you know, the denomination is going to be very
exactly.
interesting to see. But what this also signals is the fact that there perhaps the Pakatan Harapan government is not expecting any change to our sovereign credit rating.
Or the budget to be much more conservative than we originally estimated,
okay.
right, in terms
okay.
of spending. I want to just say if there's a dollar-denominated bond, you know, right now the currency is at 4.1768. Let me just repeat that, 4.1768 versus the dollar. It's a spot rate, yeah? Which means our payments are going to be expensive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
More than they were earlier this year.
All right. And there's been quite a bit of corporate news happening over the weekend. Let's kick it off with Axiata Group, because Axiata has year-to-date lost some 38% of its market value. That is 20 billion ringgit in market cap.
Yeah, this is in line with other listed telco stocks in the region, Mel. I think most of which have seen declines in their share prices. For example, as at last Thursday, Maxis was down 12% year on year. Digi was down 18% year on year, and StarHub Singapore was down 31.2%. Singtel down 11.8%.
Yeah, so obviously this is endemic of the situation in Malaysia. But you know, even though it's declined by that amount of quantum so far year to date, it still trades at 28 times earnings, which is still pretty rich, relatively speaking. But I mean, don't forget the fact that Axiata basically used to count as much as 90% or 9 of every $10 from Malaysia in terms of revenue. Today, the number is only about 30%. So it makes a lot of money from its regional
right.
kind of like markets. But the whole region is quite troubled in terms of the kind of capex that you need to upgrade and maintain your network. And as well as the fact that within Malaysia, Celcom is facing a huge competitive landscape in terms of this price war, in terms of saturation, in terms of this new data landscape.
So do you think that because of that, perhaps we might see some consolidation in the telco industry? You know, we have quite a number of players here.
Well, that's what Tan Sri Jamaluddin wants, right? He just basically wants the market to unfragment itself and see some consolidation. He says that in the past, Axiata was an acquirer, but today he wants to see if it's a bigger deal, he'll partner with other people.
Interesting.
If it's a smaller deal, they can do it, right? But that's because they don't have a lot of headroom in terms of their debt capabilities.
Yeah, because if you look at their earnings, I think last year, mobile revenue is decreasing. Last year, it accounted for 86% of the group's revenue. In 2007, it accounted for 98%. So, but in 5 years' time, they expect that to account for only 70% of the group's revenue. Mm,
and I think it's worth also looking at EDOTCO, which is the tower unit under Axiata Group. So they're looking to add about 1,000 telco towers to their portfolio in the immediate term. Part of an overall plan, they want to increase it to 10,000 towers over the next about 12 to 18 months. So I guess the idea is a slight pivot in terms of strategy, moving away from acquiring bigger towers to perhaps smaller ones.
Yeah, I think this change in strategy was also because of the deal that was aborted. I think
in Pakistan,
over $940 million deal that went through. So they're now aiming. I think EDOTCO is looking at markets in Malaysia, Bangladesh, Myanmar, and Indochina.
Yeah, so basically, EDOTCO is a wholly owned subsidiary of Axiata, and they kind of like mirror Axiata's strategy in terms of the regional footprint. So of course, a tower transmission companies, you own the base towers from which you emanate those mobile waves.
Mm-hmm.
And you monetize it by way of selling networks to other providers. That deal in Pakistan, nearly $1 billion, was actually a deal they've been working on for quite a long time. But you know, Deodar, right, which is the Pakistani. And Pakistan is a huge market. It's well over 100 million people. Penetration is nowhere near as high as it is in Malaysia. That deal fell through. So obviously now, just like Axiata, the parent, they're trying to do smaller deals.
Well, moving on to Selangor Properties, that privatization offer has also garnered quite a fair bit of, I guess, newspaper headlines over the weekend. Not all of Selangor Properties shareholders are happy about the recent privatization offer. So if you take a look at, say, Pangolin Investment Management, they hold just 1.2%, I believe. And they think that the offer price of R5.70 is too low.
Yeah, that's because looking at the book value of Selangor Prop, that's about R7.19. So looking at the offer price, that's about at a discount of over 20.7% to the book value.
So Pangolin is the fourth largest shareholder in Sel Prop. If you take a look at the first one, of course, the KN Holdings, the family one. And the second largest is Credit Suisse. They hold about 4% stake. And the third biggest shareholder is ValueCap with about 2%, 2.4%.
Yeah, so ValueCap, so the Credit Suisse Holdings, obviously a nominee for someone else. We don't know. Mm. It could be the one family, right? The thing is, what these activist investors have as a point to make is actually totally valid because, you know, Selangor Properties is a very, very thinly traded company in terms of free float. The Wern family owns most of the stock, right? And so the activist investors to come on and say, look, you know, it's trading at book value, 21% discount of book value. It's probably a lot more than that. I think Pangolin values Selangor Properties somewhere near $12 because the kind of land that they've got within the holdings. Don't forget, 4 years ago, they sold Pusat Bandar Damansara to Desmond Lim of Malton for 1,400 ringgit per square foot. Granted, that was at the top of the market, but still. So for them to say, you know, if you're the vendor, typically in any transaction, you want to sell buy back as low as possible and then relist the shares maybe later on at as high a price as possible. So between where it is now in terms of the offer at 570 and where Pangolin thinks it could be as much as at $12, obviously he wants to close that gap a little bit. Whether or not the Wern family does that, we don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see because if you look at a book value of R7.19, the land, when was the last time they revalued the land?
Yeah, exactly.
And what is their current value of how much land they have right now, right? So, I mean, these are questions that investors could and should ask. But if you look at some analysts, I think Tiam Chen Nguyen, an analyst with TA Securities, he advised that shareholders should accept the offer because of the current challenging environment as well as the low trading liquidity of
Selangor. Yeah, the low trader, like you said.
So I just need to correct myself. Actually, Desmond Lim bought the land at $1,627 per square foot, not $1,400, right? So basically,
this is the Pavilion Damansara Heights, is it?
Yeah, Pavilion Damansara Heights. So actually, that land within Selangor Properties' portfolio could be as low as 1.6 billion ringgit or as high as 2.14 billion ringgit, depending on which valuation you take it at.
Well, moving away from Sel Prop, let's take a look at UMW Industry Observer. observers are skeptical that UMW's proposed takeover of MBM Resources will materialize. The offer period has a deadline at the end of this month. So October 31st is that deadline, and MBM holds a 22.5% stake in Perodua.
Interestingly, an industry source told the Malaysian Reserve that the deal may fall through due to existing resistance from some MBM shareholders, as well as the change of leadership at PNB and Mara.
Yeah, it's gone quiet a bit, right? Remember when it was really kind of making headlines? Now I guess it's gone a bit quiet. You're right about the change in leadership at the top level. Wonder whether that's got a trickle-down effect.
Yeah, it's messy because when you try and buy a stake, and basically MBM Resources is controlled by three families, right? And you've got, within those families, you've got dissenting voices anyway. So you can have as many as what? Assuming, say, 20 dissenting shareholders in people in each entity, you can have 60 different voices in there. For you to manage that within a two-day deadline, it's going to be tough.
And FGV, a quick look at FGV. Apparently, the chairman, Dato' Azhar Abdul Hamid, said it will only serve as interim CEO for 2 to 3 months. And a new CEO is expected to be named by the end of the year.
Yeah, so Dato' Azhar, he has been chairman since September 2017, and he was previously managing director of Malakoff.
Interesting that they only are making his role an interim role and looking for perhaps a new candidate. I believe 11 candidates have been shortlisted for this top role, a majority of them coming from outside the company.
Well, he's chair and CEO at this point in time. So obviously within corporate governance principles, you can't have chair and CEO at the same time.
So, yeah.
He will remain as chair, but he'll probably have to find a new CEO, right?
And who will be in that role, I think, is someone that markets will be watching closely. Let's cross over to Sabrina Magdalene. She's going to bring you the opening numbers from Bursa Malaysia next on BFM 89.9.
Keeping you on track for peak business performance with the new Volvo XC40, the expression of innovation. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.